Hello, comrade. Could you present yourself for our French audience, please?
Yeah, my name is Nick Griffin. I'm former leader of the British National Party and member of the European Parliament. Now I'm an independent geopolitical analyst and strategist. A quite well-known British nationalist YouTuber, Professor Dutton, recently described me as the man who predicted everything.
Okay, thank you very much. And about the political history of nationalism in Great Britain, not since many years, but since last years.
It's actually a big, big question. But in simple terms, the British National Party was a serious radical nationalist electoral insurgency and challenge to the liberal elite. They stopped us by promoting on a very big scale Nigel Farage and his party, at the time UKIP, now Reform. So they did indeed stop us by taking our sound bites and telling people that they would do the same thing, but a little bit more gently. But in the course of stopping us, they got Brexit, sort of by mistake, and it's unleashed, it broke the frozen nature of British politics. It broke the anti-immigration taboo. So we're now in a position of flux in Britain, where we have two nationalist parties, one of them completely populist and libertarian, that's Nigel Farage's. We have Rupert Lowe's, which is half ethno-nationalist. British politics is now in this complete state of flux, and it's a pre-revolutionary moment. So there's no organised, effective, genuine nationalist party in Britain.
Okay.
But there's more nationalists and people who think of themselves as nationalists and are racially aware than there have ever been before.
Okay, it's very important for French people to understand the situation in Great Britain and the history of British nationalism. But you were a member of European Parliament, mm-hmm. and you are very well known for your geopolitical analysis. And could you give us your position about the geopolitical situation and the opportunities that it could give us,
yep.
as nationalists, of course?
We are, it's an opportunity. Or do we even survive? We're on the point of war now. So you and I, others older and younger than us, have grown up basically assuming we're at peace, and unless something very bad goes wrong, we will stay at peace. We are now at the logical position now is we are heading for war. Unless something very good happens, we are going to have war. The question is which war? We have a serious possibility. Well, one thing, of course, the war in Iran still continues. The Strait of Hormuz are still blocked. We're already on down a slope, which we now cannot get up, of very serious energy, economic, financial and social dislocation as a result of that. So that is already definite, which is that in its turn will produce enormous political changes, massive pressure for even more immigration to Europe from countries where people are starving in huge numbers. Because you cut off the oil, you cut off the fertilizer, you cut off the food. So that's a definite. Whether that's a war or not, that depends. But there's two wars which are coming for sure. It's a question of which one gets to us first. There's the European elites, which includes the British elite still, their war on Russia, the NATO war on Russia, war of aggression on Russia through Ukraine. And they are clearly pushing the Russians to such a point that at some point, sensibly sooner rather than later, the Russians, somebody have to say, no more, you're at war with us, there are consequences. And either the command centres or the military industrial key factories of the West will be destroyed by Russia. They have to, they can't leave things as they are. So that then means that NATO either then collapses and is proven to be a total paper tiger, or has to retaliate, and we get full-scale war. So either, certainly the Western countries, I believe Britain more than any others, perhaps Sweden and the Baltic states, are going to be hit by Russia quite soon. The Russians have to do it, and as a consequence, we will be at an open war instead of the war we have at present. We fire we give the Ukrainians missiles and intelligence to fire at the Russians, and we expect the Russians to do nothing back. This cannot go on. So war, unless we have a civil war. it's in a way not really a civil war. A civil war in France is a Frenchman against Frenchman. A civil war in Britain is the English against the English, or perhaps the English against the Scots. This won't be a civil war. This is a war between the Muslims and various other ethnic groups who side with them and the far left against us. And it's coming as a natural thing, because the demographic shift, as the old boomer generation really starts to die, our population is going to sink so quickly that it will make our people very scared and the immigrant groups very confident, because they can see that street used to be white, used to be English, used to be French, now it's our street, another street, another street. So that makes things unstable. But on top of that, there's an enormous push. It's happening all over Europe with the identitaire people, Martin Selner and so on. This is a push from the American deep state and from the Zionists to push Europe into civil war, not because they want us to save Europe, to save Britain, to save France. No, they don't. They want us to fight Israel's wars. They want us to fight a war on behalf of the American deep state and to devastate Europe for the benefit of the dollar and the American deep state. And this isn't just now small things. In Europe still, it's not as big. It's Selner, people like that. In Britain, there's an enormous effort, multi-million pounds every year. Tommy Robinson is the obvious one, who's just a Zionist stooge. But it's through to a major TV station, through to elements of the British military elite. They're all of us pushing for a civil war in Britain between the Muslims and everyone else. And when you have millions of pounds and very powerful people, especially on social media, pushing for a war in a country that is already unstable, basically it's a volcano waiting to explode, they will have their war. So war is coming. Absolutely. The only question is which one comes first.
Yes. And about that point of view, something is very interesting. You are British, and the situation in Great Britain is quite different from the situation in France. Mm-hmm. Our French audience doesn't know exactly what can happen in Great Britain, because, of course, we see the situation as French people can see the situation. Could you explain to our audience the differences and what are the opportunities and what we have to do in Great Britain?
Well, the first thing to think about in Britain, more specifically the English are the only people who've voted to leave the European Union and left. Now, it's not a proper leaving. We didn't get what we wanted, but still, we have left. It was the English, it wasn't Britain, because the Scots voted to remain. In Northern Ireland, they voted to remain. The Welsh just voted to remain. It was the English who said, no, we're leaving. Bang. So no one else has done that. It's a very radical thing for a population to do. 17.4 million votes. It's the biggest democratic mandate ever. An instruction of the political elite, do this. And it was mainly about taking control of our borders and keeping our country British, English, and they didn't do it. So that's the last serious effort of the British people to make a change through the ballot box and believing in the system. When that wasn't delivered, now it's more radical. So we now have, for the last 18 months, Nigel Farage's party. Now, I'm not for Farage, but he is a populist. He's just partly with the establishment and just outside the establishment. But the public think he's outside the establishment. And his party, Now Reform, has led in the opinion polls, in every single opinion poll for the last 18 months. Now, this is incredible. It's an amazing thing. This is the collapse of the old two-party system. So that's very important. And again, it shows how the British public have just up here decided, no, this has to change. And then you've seen, as we've gone around England the last couple of days, in many areas there are flags. The Union flag and the St George Cross flag, or in Wales it'll be the Union flag and the Welsh dragon. In Scotland it's the Union flag and the Scottish saltire. Wherever you go, there's our tribal flags. And this is not by the state. In many areas, the councils, the local administrations have taken the flags down. But there was a time late last summer when everywhere there were flags. It's a scale I've never seen. Only in Northern Ireland, in the height of the Troubles, when the two sides were, everything was shown by, oh, you know you're in a Republican area, there are tricolours, you know you're in a Loyalist area, there are Union flags. That's the only time I've ever seen this level of tribal marking. And it came from nowhere, from ordinary people and through social media. And it again marks out the way that the British have, something has changed in the British mentality. And then the final thing, of course, is that in Northern Ireland particularly, but also in several parts of England, we've now had quite major riots against the various immigrant groups. When there's been crime in Northern Ireland by Roma and Africans, mainly, and the loyalists have just risen up with riots by 2,000-3,000 people, and they just burnt these people's houses out. It's very radical things going on the mainland. It hasn't been this, that hasn't happened yet, but there've been, by mainland standards, very serious riots of ordinary people. These aren't committed nationalists. These aren't people coming into an area. This is just the people of this area saying, we have had enough, having big demonstrations. The police, of course, are very kind and polite to all the ethnic groups if they're having a demonstration. When it's English people, the police are bah, bah, bang. And instead of just accepting it as they used to, the English are now fighting back. And it's only just beginning. And the really important thing is in Northern Ireland, where this has happened, and it's happened in several different areas. They've had these riots, the immigrants have been forced to leave, and then there's peace, because there's nothing else to riot about. You've achieved your objectives. And the immigrants there have quite recently arrived. They don't have a strong community, so they can't defend themselves. They just had to leave. When this happens on the mainland, on the other hand, you have immigrant communities which are not only strong enough to stay, they are stronger than their English neighbours, because they're completely united. They unite around the mosque, around the community, around the clan. They're united and they're aggressive. And they've got a lot of even combat experience. Thousands of them have served in Afghanistan with the Taliban. Thousands of English people, young men, have served with the British Army, but they've all come back here. So if it comes to communal trouble on English soil, then the immigrants won't just leave. They'll fight. And at that point, everything can spin out of control, because it took the entire British Army and very strong local paramilitary police forces to control Northern Ireland. This was a population of, 600,000 Catholics sympathetic to the Republicans, 400 IRA men, and it took the whole British Army to control them. At a time, the British Army had an active strength of 100,000. The British Army now has an active strength of 40,000. And they couldn't control Birmingham or East London, let alone the whole country. And then at that point, when you have one community wants to fight another community, and the other way around, the police can't stop it, the army can't stop it. What can stop it? Nothing. So hence, the people who want civil war can find it very easy to push us further. So it's a very dangerous time, a very interesting time. It justifies what nationalists, and there's several of us really who are known to the British public. See, Mosley isn't really known to the British public as someone who talked about immigration, because he was there a long time ago. So there's Enoch Powell, who was a leader of he was a conservative figure in the late 1960s, who, when immigration was a very small thing, 50,000 people a year, I thought, if we could have only 50,000 coming a year now, we'd be so happy. It's a sensible number. He was saying this 50,000 a year is terrible. And he said it's like a cloud on a day like today, very sunny. It's like a little cloud over there, the size of a man's hand, but the cloud will grow. And he said that in 1968. And older British people remember that from when he said it. Younger people have seen his famous speech. There was him and there was me. And obviously I'm more recent than Powell. And again, 20 years ago, was saying this is going to be a very serious problem. This is going to end up in very serious bloodshed. People, I'm stopped in the street more often now than I was 10 years ago by people saying, you were right, we should have listened. Everyone knows that Britain is a volcano waiting to explode. It doesn't mean, sorry, one last thing, it doesn't mean it will explode next week. It might. It doesn't mean it will explode this summer. It very well could. It means it will explode within the next 5 years.
Okay, thank you very much. A conclusion for our French audience.
Obviously, the situation in France is different in many ways, but we are essentially the same people, the same faith, and the same problems. So I think the crucial thing is to understand that the parliamentary political process is a circus. It's entertainment. I don't know if you use the word soap opera about the TV programmes, which are just, they follow a community or people in a hospital or something, and it's just a drama. Yeah, and it goes on every week, the drama. And they're only there for two things, these soap operas. They're there to entertain, and they're also there to indoctrinate people. They all have a multiracial theme. They have the theme of a bigoted person who causes trouble, and so on. They're there to train people to accept liberal values. And the parliamentary process is a soap opera. It's designed to entertain people. It's designed to waste their time. It's designed to make them think, I don't have to do anything. We don't have to do anything because the man over there, or the woman over there, he or she, they're going to sort it all out. We can just sit and watch. That's the nature of the parliamentary process. And sometimes it's necessary for an organisation to take part in the political process in order to be there. But the idea of the political process can sort out the demographic catastrophe that is Europe is a nonsense. The only people who can sort this out is not the politicians over there, it's you. It's you and your family and your community. And it's your organisation which is going to be important. And the idea that the politicians can return things to normal is a nonsense. This is never going to be normal again. All I can say is, I wish I was 22 or 25 so I could see the whole process through, because it's going to be a very exciting, dangerous, bloody, but historical time.
So, thank you very much. From Belfast to Paris, from Toulouse to Birmingham, no surrender.
No surrender.